because the other, start the talking. First. So I run into, you know, Coot into the hallway, and the first thing he says to me is, out loud to everybody, as loud as anybody can hear, "So I heard you guys are doing a podcast today." So I said, "Thank you for announcing to the world that we're doing a podcast." And immediately 17 people turned their head to want to know, "And what's the link for the podcast?"
Yeah.
So I said, "You got to talk to our inevitable producer who hasn't done jack about this."
Oh, and you said that loudly in front of everyone, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
You know, you're just as bad as Coon.
So he hasn't done jack about it. And then I said,
"It's the pot calling the kettle black there."
Then I said, "Well, why do you ask? To which are you rolling, Bradley?"
Yeah.
To Richie replies, "Because I want to know the topic." To which I reply, "We don't work like that."
Yeah.
He said, so everybody looked, and they said, "Please explain." And I said, "Here's the problem. When Walden and I walk into a room, I certainly don't want to know what we're going to be talking about. And Walden probably doesn't care really what we're talking about, because he wants to be able to tell the story. First of all. Second of all, if I know ahead of time, I can't be spontaneous and basically make crap up. You know, if I don't know something, I'll just make it up." Well, and Walden, he's furiously looking at me because he knows I've either made shit up or I've invented something. So he's pointing at Bradley to look up to see whether it's BS or not BS. And then he says something.
I never point at you, Bradley. I never do that.
And then he sort of stops me, makes me think. So alternatively, my methodology was when I can't make crap up, I just stub Walden. Yeah.
When you can't make crap up, Lenny, we're going to put you down.
Right. Well, we've got to get up to get down.
Well, the problem is that, you know, and this is true. You make stuff up or it's real. And it's like that. Yeah, is it Memorex? You know,
like nobody can tell him because nobody has lived that long, that long.
Back at the Fillmore East, when I was watching Hendrix for 85 days in a row.
That's right.
Like, did that really happen?
85 days, it was 85 minutes. That acid that they were passing around, you can't really tell between days and minutes and what that really meant. But, you know, it's...
Yeah, I know. See, that's the thing. So
I thought about, you know, what would I want to talk about today? And what there were two things that I was moved by over the past, I'd say the past week. And both of them involve, you know, older ladies who although they are of a certain age, either surely will live on forever. We'll live on. Well, there you go. We'll live on forever, certainly in the musicology world. And some of them have.
I get the first vote.
Suppressed their age, but live on. And Walden, you and I were at the Judy Collins concert on this past Sunday in Denver, and of course she told the Joni Mitchell story, and then Joni pops up and performs at Newport unannounced to the wildest excitement of the crowd.
I'm sure it was. It was crazy.
Yeah. So she talked about all these people that she knew. Judy did when we saw Judy Judy. Judy, sweet Judy, blue eyes, I might add. Talk a little bit about, you know, that, you know, the experience, or I know that we saw her recently a couple of years ago, but again, and how fabulous that was.
So to me, I mean, first off, she sang like an angel. She has an incredible register, you know, like Joni Mitchell to a certain extent, that goes way high, and yet she can still hit the low notes. But going getting that pure sound that she does is remarkable. She's 83 or 84, 83. Whatever that is. And so it's remarkable to hear her. And then in between the actual songs, she's telling stories about hanging out with Al Kooper or Bob Dylan or, you know, Joni Mitchell, whatever. Just... Because that's what she did. She,
so, you know, so we can't, because I think you'll do a great job. We can't, in your storytelling, you know, style, we can't the Joni Mitchell, Al Cooper,
right.
So, Joni Mitchell, you know, Judy Collins connection, because I thought there was such a blast, especially with Joni showing up in the same week at Newport, and how we were listening to the Cooper cast, and we'll talk about that and give a shout out to those guys.
So Joni, no, so Judy. I'll start with Judy. Judy Collins told a story, and she sort of backs into this because she's sort of introducing songs in odd ways, and this is an introduction to a song, but she only tells like a third of the story. So I'll tell you the third of the story, and then we'll go to where the story really went. So she is talking and saying, you know, I was asleep one night, you know, passed out. And somebody called me in the middle of the night, about 3 a.m, and she's looking around sort of like she can't remember the name, and the violinist or the keyboardist, I don't remember who said it, but said, Al Cooper. Oh, yeah, it was Al Cooper. Al Cooper called me in the middle of the night, 3 a.m, and said, hey, Judy, you just got to listen to this. And then put some girl on the phone. And it was amazing. It was really good. And she gave me this song to play. And then she breaks into Both Sides Now. And you're like, oh, it was. She didn't mention Joni Mitchell by name. That, so it was just some girl. Some girl in the middle of the night.
So the other side of the story, which we heard on the Cooper cast, which we discovered as part of our, you know, so entranced with the story and everything, and to discover that there's an Al Cooper podcast, which we want to give a shout out to, because amen to his web human, which he called Bradley. That's your new title, his web human.
On the beginning of every single CooperCast, he calls himself something different. I'm the webmeister. I'm the webmaster. I'm the web human. I'm the web. It's like, and so he's got a sense of humor about it.
I'm the guy with the board over here.
So Bradley, you're a board.
You're a good guy with the board over here.
So I want to say before you get into this, the other thing she said about Al Cooper.
She
introduced him. Al Cooper called me, and she sort of looked out on the audience like, maybe they don't know who Al Cooper is.
It's a moment.
Al Cooper, you know, he started Blood, Sweat, and Tears. Have you guys heard of them before? and then she goes, he knew my number, and I'm thinking, because this is back, you know, in the 60s.
Days of hookies.
This is like, you know, you're dialing the, you know, on a landline. He had my number memorized, but he wasn't my boyfriend, you know, and sort of like, but he still had my number memorized for some reason.
Found it on a bar napkin or something, yeah.
Well, no.
Here comes the Cooper cast. The rest of the story.
So that's what she said, so that, which is great.
So we were entranced. So we knew we had to do some research because we were just, A, we love the story. B, we both love Al Cooper. God bless you, Al. Come out of retirement. Come play a concert. We'd love to see you. We miss you. I miss you very much. You know, let's go to the Cafe Wa and hear the Blues Project. I don't know. So anyway, so he tells the story and he tells the story by interviewing Al, which is even better because you get it from the other side of the story. So, Walden, Al
said, so one evening, I was hanging out after a Blues Project show, and Joni Mitchell.
No, this cute girl is hanging out.
Right, but he knew her.
He knew her, but he didn't say it like that.
So he knew her because she had been dating the drummer.
Roy Blumenthal.
But they broke up. And so she was despondent, and she was miserable. And she started talking to Al. And they were drinking together. And then she says,
can I go home with you? Can I go back to your place?
No, it was she invited him,
Al,
to her place. Okay. And so Al's thinking,
I'm going to get lucky.
He's getting lucky tonight with this despondent pretty girl. And they get to Joni's place, and Joni is not interested in that. She wants to play him music. And Al hasn't heard her sing before. And all of a sudden, Al's like, well, this isn't happening. And then he puts on his producer hat.
No.
He
doesn't say it doesn't happen. Immediately his head switched from the guy to the great producer that Al has always been and the recognizer of talent. And Al says, holy crap, I gotta have somebody listen.
So where was she at in her career?
She hadn't even started.
I mean, she hadn't even cut a demo tape in the basement anything?
Wait, there's more.
Ginsu Knives or something?
So he recognizes the fact that he's gotta call somebody now. And he realizes the only phone number he memorizes, which might or might not be true, is Judy Collins.
He knew it because two things. He was living with Judy Collins at the time.
Right, that's right. But he wasn't. But
so
they
it's just kind of his home
house.
Number. Yeah.
But they were in the same house.
So, at the time.
But he was living with her. He wasn't living. Well, we don't know because he hasn't told that
part. He did say that she had a boyfriend. Because she pointed. But I was living at her house.
So it was a large house with lots of rooms that he was possibly living.
That's why he met.
Well, Judy Collins was on top of the world, and
right.
Because of that, he knew her schedule, and he knew.
She'd be home sleeping.
that she was leaving for Newport at 5 a.m. to go to the Newport Folk Festival.
Now remember, Newport News, Rhode Island from New York City is about 5-hour drive, and especially back in the '60s, you're not going. You're going 50 miles an hour,
right.
And the cars. Although it might have been fast, she wasn't going to be, you know, speeding down the highway, you know, Steppenwolf star.
Well, she might have been, but let's just say she's not. So
driving,
he calls up Judy, wakes her up, and says, "You got to listen to this person," and she says,
it's freaking 3 o'clock in the morning, Al. Why the hell are you calling me? You know I got to get up in 2 hours. He says, yeah, I know. You got to listen to this. And she goes,
Right. So she listens, and then Al puts the question to her. You got to take her to Newport with you. And you got to get her up on that stage, even though she's not on the ticket. You got to... It's all on Judy.
So remember, this is 1965. Joni Mitchell hasn't arrived anywhere yet. No record label contract, no signing deal, no other than playing the clubs in New York City, Cafe One, some others.
In Canada,
Toronto, obviously, but you know, before that, but she came down to New York City.
How old was she?
21,
maybe
22, maybe. I don't think she was. I don't think she was much more than that. I gotta look it up because right now she's 78. So go figure it out. What does that mean? Whatever that. Go do the math real quick in your head. But she was.
He's got to ask me to do that.
It's gotta be 18, maybe 18 or 19 actually. Now I think about it.
Yeah.
She's not. She's not. Yeah, she might be 18.
That would be 57 years ago.
Yeah. So there you go. Wow. So she does, she sings both sides now. Now, 3 o'clock in the morning, and she's half awake, and she's listening to this angel of a voice.
Over
who we
an
know,
old, cell, old telephone.
Dial up, Potts telephone. Maybe a plain old dial tone telephone. And she gets the end of the song, and Al grabs the phone out of Joni Mitchell's hand. Or I don't know, maybe Al was holding it up to the thing. And he says to her,
gotta take her.
What do you think? And Judy goes,
get her on the sidewalk in front of my apartment at 5:30, and you owe me one.
And that, my friends, is the first time. So this past Tuesday, what's today's date? The 27th.
Yep.
That was the anniversary, literally, of Joni Mitchell's premiere at Newport Folk Festival.
And not only was it a premiere, but she got signed from being...
Instantaneously!
She got signed, and this was the launching of her career, based on a 3 o'clock in the morning phone call.
So John Hammond, old Columbia record label producer, who hired Al Cooper to be the producer, by the way, and launched Al's career as a producer... That is, you know, you talk about a connection.
Yeah, that was a win for everybody there.
That was a win-win-win all the way for everybody. And you talk about an amazing moment. And, you know, and Bradley and I, before Walden walked in, and as we start getting ready to record, we were listening to, and I got to admit, I was crying with both heartfelt emotion and a little bit of sadness to see Joni, because she's... still amazing, but, you know, obviously in a very frail health as she's getting on. But it was an amazing, you know, week, so to speak, for Judy and Joni, almost as a bookends and a both sides now moment, so to speak. We watched Joni, Judy performing and Joni performing. And for those... I don't know. If there's anybody out there in the audience who actually got to see Judy Collins this weekend in Denver and then the following Tuesday in Newport,
that would be amazing.
I want to know who you are, because that would be one of those, oh my God, great moments in life.
Yep.
You know, from a performer. That was pretty amazing. You know, I was also, you know, move to think about, you know, who else of that era, of that ilk, who is still performing, who'd you say, boy, if I had one more chance, I'd want to see...
Carole King still touring?
Oh, yeah.
That would be mine.
She's good. I saw James Taylor literally the week... or several days before I saw Judy Collins. And he still has, I'd say, 90% of his range of voice. He's not 100%. And he, like Judy, is hilarious in between songs.
Oh, they got great stories.
Telling stories and cracking jokes. And his son Henry is touring with him, also doing a bang-up job. He did an amazing version, which he now has been part of his tour of Steamroller, which is really a funky down, get down kind of version of Steamroller. You know, I'm a Steamroller baby, you know, great version of that. But James still got it.
Yeah, no, I've seen him a couple of times in the past decade, and I'm always surprised at... he's gone from being, you know, I saw him a long time ago when he was sort of in his prime, and he didn't tell as many stories, but it was like he had a big act in the whole thing. And now he's moved into that sort of
entertainer
role where he can lean back and reflect a little bit, be comfortable with the crowd, be comfortable with everything. It reminds me a whole lot of
Judy Collins? But Judy Collins?
No,
did.
What? No.
Well, it reminded
Judy Collins.
Of that comfortableness.
Jackson Browne does the same thing, you know, very, very similar.
I was just going to say, it's nice that some of these older musicians are now taking that approach where they're kicking back and it's like, you enjoy the music. You've heard it 1,000 times, but have you heard this story?
Yeah, so the one, so we saw somebody recently, which I will say doesn't take that approach and lunges head on, not that he ever hasn't lunged head on, was Carlos Santana. and
Elton John was the same way when we saw him in Montana. He just went from one song to the next song.
So when we saw
Elton,
I think 2018, I think it was. I'll tell you what. I've seen Elton 70s, 80s, 90s. He still had it in 20.
And he just plows right through it.
2018 when we saw him. 2019 when.
Yeah.
He still had it, and Elton has done enough goodbye tours to say goodbye to the world.
The 27th goodbye tour.
Goodbye, Yellow Brick Road, again. Yeah.
You know, Elton still had it, but I'm not complaining about Carlos, but I would have enjoyed a little bit more, not
talking
full. Well, he doesn't do a lot of talking,
I know.
But he does some. But I've seen him do some, and he gets into his, you know, spiritual stuff and all this other stuff, you know. And his wife is performing with him, who's absolutely amazing if you haven't seen as well. But I wish that Carlos would just take a step back, because his volume level was 60s rock and roll
11.
Concert. Yeah, no, he was 14.
He was
beyond the Marshall 11. He was 14.
Well, and, but on the other hand, that was the concert was Earth, yes. Wind and Fire doing the same thing. I mean, this was a 60s tour.
Well, Earth, Wind and Fire, 70s.
So was Carlos. Yeah.
They started in the 60s, though.
Yeah, no.
Late 60s?
No, sir.
You sure?
First release, they started in early 70. First release was 74. The movie, which was released which was released the same time, as the first album.
First album was in 71 or something, because I was in high school listening to.
They started in the late.
What was the first album?
I want to say the brothers started earlier. In 69.
Okay,
68.
So but I'm saying Earth, Wind, and Fire, what was the release?
I think it was 71, maybe.
What was the release? What was the album called? Because the first album was That's the Way of the World, and that was the movie, I think.
What do you want me to look up, Walden?
Looking at the show, once again, one of these chances to make crap up before they can look it up. Anybody want to save me here quick?
So while he's looking that up, Lenny, you put the question out there, your female performer from back then. Mine was Carole King. I'd love to go see that again if she came through.
So I had a chance to see Carole, you know, in various different iterations, so to speak. You know, the Bette Midler era, so to speak, of female performers. Mm-hmm. And Carole was always interesting because, at least in the beginning, she was a reluctant performer because she was just waking up.
She was a writer.
Yeah, because she was just, and so I saw her in a club in New York where she was still married before she moved to L.A. And she, you know, was doing one of those kind of piano bar kind of fun things. And that, it was interesting to see her like that, only to, you know, experience her later in another fashion. But, you know, I don't know. Did you see her with the James Taylor tour?
She was not there with James Taylor when he came through Montana.
So everybody raved on that tour. I don't know that I know I didn't see it. I don't know how I felt about that.
So
Earth, Wind and Fire
started in 69. First album, 71, called Earth, Wind and Fire. That's the Way of the World. That was their fifth album.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
yeah, they had a couple of low.
I remember in high school, it was like, you know, P-Funk and Earth, Wind, and Fire was the soundtrack of my, you know, high school.
So for those of you who haven't seen the movie That's the Way of the World, and the band in the movie was called The Band, was actually Earth, Wind, and Fire, and it was based upon their initial career start. And the manager who played in the movie was?
Harvey Keitel.
Keitel.
Yeah.
Buzz Brandon, Bradley incorrectly, was Harvey Keitel. And Harvey Keitel in a oddly, you know, cast.
Very 70-ish looking, though.
Very, very 70-ish looking role. And Harvey, if you don't know, also was the hitman of the movie after the Taxi Driver.
Reservoir Dogs.
Called Fingers, based in New York, written by the guy who wrote Taxi Driver, where Harvey was a classical pianist, jazz pianist, during the day or during the night.
And Earth, Wind, and Fire manager on the side.
No, and Hitman, at night. Otherwise.
That's good.
That's good. Just, you know, tying some musical history with some movie history kind of moment. So, okay, let's get one or two more, Walden. People, I know you've seen a lot, so it's maybe not fair. But someone you'd say, boy, I'd still like to see that person again.
From the 60s. So yeah, this is the...
Or the 70s, because, you know, there may not be enough people with a voice left from the 60s. Because, for example, I saw Chicago. Oh, my God. Their voices have gone. As much as I love the band.
So, you know, there's very few people I want to see. I mean, I would have loved to see. I just lost her name. Hold, I'll come back to that.
French lady, perhaps?
No,
very good looking.
Yeah, thank you.
she talks wee wee.
I'm trying to think. You know, like most people from that era, their voices are gone.
Right, that's the sad thing.
And it is sad. I was.
I get you somebody from that era whose voice is not gone, who's up there, Al Green.
He's not a girl.
I know, but I'm saying, but people from that era, Al Green's not a girl.
Nope.
What? What? Wait a second.
He's talking about Alice.
How
Green.
Does he?
Oh, yeah.
Alice Green.
Okay.
What is his pronouns?
The man.
Oh, I see. Reverend.
Reverend. Yes, Reverend Al Green.
So yeah.
Yeah, I would love to go see Al Green. That would be a show to see in a small venue.
I've seen Al Green.
I'd like
so
to
many
see Nancy
times.
Wilson. And I mean,
they were
I'd
just
like
wow.
to see the Wilsons. I'd like to see both the Wilsons together.
The Wilson sisters.
Yeah, you betcha.
Weren't Wilson they just sisters
here?
Up for now?
Yeah, Hard. I think they were. Well, they were supposed to be here last year. I'm not sure.
Didn't.
They
no,
actually.
I thought they were here like a week
no.
or two or.
I don't think so.
Soon or somewhere in that area.
Yeah. I don't know.
But I'd like to see the Wilson sisters.
The Wilsons. I'll tell you what. In their prime, they kick some serious butt.
Right. I'd like to see You're what they about. Sound like now. I mean, I don't know. Right.
Yeah.
And then. I think other there's not a whole lot of I've seen Patti Smith too many times. I know her voice is gone.
Yeah,
she didn't have it.
Sad.
You know, I just got.
I'll tell you whose voice hasn't gone, Philip Bailey. Philip Bailey of Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Oh yeah,
I mean he can't hit the highest sustaining notes that he used to, but he still has the voice of that era.
So I was never a fan of Pat Benatar.
Pat Benatar is a good singer.
But she's got a great voice from that era.
I heard her sing recently.
Yeah.
She's still got a baby. And still playing with her husband.
Yep.
Still touring.
Yep.
You know, you talk about rock and roll hard on a marriage. That marriage has survived. Amazing, you know, despite what everybody says about a rock and roll marriage.
Yeah, so Pat Benatar. I'm trying to think of other women.
Guys.
So I will say, you know, that the number of women from that era is...
It's kind of small.
Sadly small.
Well, no, but until you get into Motown...
But I think you think Grace Slick... Motown broke the mold on it. But, I mean, you know, you think about Grace Slick, Joni Mitchell...
All
the ones
we've
mentioned.
Grace Slick. No voice, right?
Yeah.
But there's, like you say, there's very few women of that era until Motown. And then Motown just broke it wide open.
Motown in the 60s
Philly
and 70s, there's
a lot of
women. And
I think, I want to say Motown was bigger than Philly as far as the women singers go.
Absolutely, because they recruited a cadre
of
people.
That was a machine.
Right, that was, you can't even second guess Motown machine.
I know you've seen... You also saw the movie Respect.
Yes. Oh my God.
So
that was
Aretha is.
Well, first of all, before you even go there, Jennifer Hudson in that movie.
Yeah.
What took my breath away?
Yeah.
Took
exactly.
my breath away. I mean, you talk about, and I know you saw Elvis, but there was the embodiment of Aretha, and I will say, not about her, Jennifer Hudson, and not about the movie. But I was disappointed because they only went up to that moment where she recorded the gospel album, which was the best selling. And I was actually telling somebody how her gospel stuff outsold everybody, yep, and outsold her catalog, and was the leader of her catalog. And everybody says, "No way, she had this and that." And I said, "You cannot understand the potency and the power of gospel at that age, recording at that time from a star like Aretha, and what it did to place gospel on the charts that brought in the Staple Singers
and a lot of the singers,
Edward Talkin singers,
right, and a lot of the female singers of that era with Motown came out of the churches.
Absolutely. Well, you tell me
who didn't.
I was about to say thank you very much. If the mom or dad didn't take the kid to church and they were learning, they certainly went to church then and enhanced their ability. But yeah. So talk a little bit. I know that you saw the Elvis movie. So give the Walden Miller Elvis movie. I know that I haven't seen it. I had the pleasure.
So I'll just say that if you haven't seen it, you should see it. I don't even care if you're an Elvis fan or not. A couple things that are just big, huge takeaways from the movie is that Beatlemania, 10 years later,
there's nothing to Elvis Mania.
Elvis Mania was on the same level in craziness.
No more.
But it had an equal and opposite reaction of...
Of course.
This was right in the face of the religious community.
Oh, he broke a lot of barriers.
That
embraced the black, what do they call them? The race music.
Yeah. Oh, it was race music. And it was a big deal. And he got signed by Sun because they needed a white guy who could sing. And he got out of Sun because he got too big for Sun. Sun could not handle the fame. And that was an interesting, it was a tidbit they sort of threw in and let go.
Yeah, well, it's part of that Colonel Parker story, which I know that Walden, you walked away from, in terms of that, but the movie is really a Colonel Parker story.
It's a Colonel Parker retelling of the Elvis myth.
Right.
And so...
Oh, not the myth.
Oh, no, no.
The myth legend.
The legend, myth. But it's a lot of stuff there. And so you walk away from the movie thinking, I wonder if that really happened way. And because it was told from Parker's perspective. And so some of it, you can sort of... say, yeah, that's his view of this. I would love to see a movie flipped on its side and the same actor, doing it, because, oh my Lord, he was
good.
Beyond good. It is worth, it made me, after seeing the movie, I looked up every Elvis movie, not the ones that he made, but movies about Elvis, his return to, his roots, and everything that has sort of been done about him. I watched them all. I probably watched 4 hours of movies on YouTube of just like, here's a 20-minute movie, here's a,
right.
A
little documentary here.
A little documentary here. Just because it was so fascinating. Now, one thing, I happened to be living down in North Carolina when Elvis died, and the South cried. I mean, it was really, really
music
amazing.
Music lovers everywhere.
And I wasn't a big Elvis fan, but I didn't get. No. You have no clue. I was laying insulation as a job, so I'd have to go into people's houses, and every house I went into had an Elvis shrine. We're talking about candles, and what cracks me up is the Elvis liquor, bottles that are like. I mean, they're. Elvis, you unscrew his head, and you pour out your liquor.
Shaped
right?
Like, okay,
it's like,
yeah.
I mean, they're all saved.
I don't think I've ever had an Elvis bourbon.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think I have.
So what was interesting in the movie was that Colonel Parker takes credit for basically the whole merch idea. He had Elvis, And before Elvis, there was no reason to have merch like this. And so he like he made like
again, lunch boxes and towels.
Oh yeah, well he bourbon. So he had these big had buttons about you know I love Elvis. Well he was smart enough to go out and create buttons I hate Elvis. He's like that he could sell to the other side and just make money off of them too, right? And it's all true. I mean this is you know I looked it all up and it's all backed up. It was a crazy movie in that sense in terms of all the sort of things that we think about much later, 10 years later, were all being done in the 50s with both Parker and Elvis. And it was, and the dancing and the performances gave you a really good feeling of what it must have been like to walk in and see something that outrageous and cool. Now, they played with the facts on a number of things, you know, and I'll say that no big, you know, reveal here, but, you know, they talk about Priscilla and Elvis getting together when he was overseas because she was a
14?
Well, she was 14, but not in the movie. She was 18 in the movie, mm-hmm. or near the same age. So they didn't want to sort of replay fight that battle in this movie. But it was sort of, you know, they glossed over the age difference thing. And they glossed over his, I'll say, prevalent desire for young girls. So they wiped, you know, they didn't go into those parts.
Well, I would imagine that, and, you know, Will, I think Will never know this, because we're not those people. But being famous at 16 or 17 or 18.
It's a different story.
It really plays with your head. And I only experienced it secondhand when I was doing baseball back in the 70s, and I see these 18 and 19-year-old bonus babies, you know, and at the time, you know, the million-dollar bonus baby, nowadays they talk about $40 million bonus babies, but at the time, $1 million in the 70s was gigantic.
That's a big hunk of cheddar.
And I'd see these kids, literally, you know, playing baseball or, you know, and they thought they were kings of the world, and to a certain extent, unfortunately, the way we as society treats them is as if they're kings of the world. And if you're an Elvis, imagine what that does to your head.
Well, and you look at all the rock stars of the 60s and 70s, that even though they might not, I mean, it was cash flow. So they had cash coming through their hands and stuff, but they weren't becoming rich because the record companies were becoming rich. But because of their celebrity, you know, drugs flow freely
women,
around them.
Women,
drugs, alcohol.
Opportunity. No, I mean, it boils down to really opportunity. Yeah. Like you say, I mean, we started off with the phone call.
Right.
That's opportunity.
So it's,
you know,
funny
but
that
that's a group of
people.
So
it's funny that you mentioned it. So last night I had the great honor and privilege of seeing Chris Brody again last night, and he had his band right now is one of the most amazing bands, and not only does he have a very tight jazz funk sort of combination band, but he also comes on stage with the classical violinist that tours with Andrea Bocelli as well as him, with an opera singer who did a couple of arias, with a crazy, incredible soul funk singer. And so he actually was kind of fun because he walks, and there's a concert in the round, and it's only about 3,000 people there, you know, maybe 3,000, maybe a tiny bit more. But he's walking out, and he stops and talks to and befriends two 10-year-olds. You know, and he comes up on stage, and after he plays his first two songs, he talks about opportunity, which is what you just mentioned. He says, don't let anybody tell you it's like you're going to America's Got Talent or some other stuff. It's all about opportunity and who you know, and taking advantage of the fact that you've met somebody. And then he brought, and then he went in the audience and talked to another kid. He brought these two kids on stage with them for the last four songs of the night, and they played. And it turned the concert into something. It was already an incredible concert, an incredible series of combinations of people playing, including the classical violinist.
It turned into a big feel-good moment.
Well, he not only did the classical violinist play classical, she did a Led Zeppelin song. You know, they did a couple of Earth, Wind & Fire and Michael Jackson. Where those came from, who knows? You know, and arias and other stuff like that. And then these kids, Chris Botti's handing off his trumpet to this 10-year-old who's trading notes with him on the same trumpet. How many times, you know, what's this 10-year-old going to be thinking when he's 14? He said, I traded off notes with Chris Botti.
So I saw Green Day a number of years ago, and Green Day does a similar thing. Right. They brought a guy up, little kid, you know, 10 years, 12 years old, and strapped a guitar on him. And I talked to him, ever been on stage, ever done it? Like, no, I don't know how to play guitar. And so, you know,
he shows him
how to chord, play it, boom. No, play it loudly. You know, and he plays it, turn it up. And it goes, okay, now I'm going to point at you,
and you hit
and you're going to hit that, okay? Okay, and the drums start up. Right. You know, like all of a sudden he's like,
I got him in a roll here.
I'm playing with Green Day. This little kid is like totally like amazed. And he goes, keep the guitar.
Yeah, and then,
I know. So he walks off the stage with, you know,
Green Day guitar
that he just played on stage with Green Day.
Yeah.
You know, and like, now, and you think about 10 years later, he's got this guitar in his hands and he's like, I played with Green Day.
I could be a jukebox hero.
I am gonna, like, you know.
Maybe you don't know where this kid
is. But it is the opportunity.
It's an opportunity.
And now his life has been changed.
Exactly. You know?
Tell the story from last night of the singer, of the tenor.
Oh my God. That was another moment Bradley and I were talking about. So they've already crushed the first five songs, including Talking to the Kid and whatever. And Chris Botti says, listen, you know, I've got this, you know, this Yugoslavian kid which I'm going to also tell a story on, who just turned 21. And, but, you know, we've already done some jams and other stuff like that. I'm not going to say much, except, you know, it's really good. And so we just let him up on the stage. And so here's this guy with this really sparkly jacket and tight black jeans. And he opens his mouth. And he does 10 bars of an aria with them. And he takes a breath. And 3,000 people in unison explode. And he has this moment where he goes, ooh. And he says, wow, that was incredible. And Chris Botti turns to him and says, see, I told you, this is the place to play. and everybody went nuts. But it was this moment that this guy had as a 22-year-old, and obviously he has some talent because, I mean, his voice and everything was incredible, but it was like he didn't expect
that reaction.
And the audience didn't expect it. So here you have two groups that totally don't know what's going to happen. And he does that, and they have this reaction, and simultaneously this explosion of feeling and, like, energy around the stage is like, what was that?
So I do want to add, this is a theater, this is a in the round situation where you have people on all sides, and so it's very intimate.
Right, there's maybe 750 on each of the four, so to make up the 3,000 people, yeah. And the sound, I must say, for the fact that it's in the round is amazing quality.
Yeah.
Very well mixed, Bradley, you'll appreciate, as compared to some of these other places where you know how hard it is to mix in the round because you really got to tune the speakers for each side. And add to that, that Chris Bode walks wirelessly around the entire place. The leads, the soul and funk singer did it. The violinist did it. And everybody else did it. So you have the challenge not only of it being in the round, but now they're wirelessly roaming the place and no feedback, perfectly balanced sound. And it's going, oh my God. And I'm going, that's hard. That's hard. That's all. That was an amazing sort of moment. So the one other thing that was an interesting moment from that concert of last night was, so the 21-year-old, second song of the night, plays this amazing riff. I mean, he goes from a little walking sort of classical thing to where he's almost Jerry Lee Lewis style, pounding on the piano, blasting it away. You know that the if he would have jumped up on the piano Jerry Lee Lewis style, and he finishes it, and Chris Brody, and obviously the crowd goes wild, and Chris Brody said, "What do you think?" And he says, "I think I need a beer." And someone gets up in the front row and hands him a beer. He pops it open. He says, "Wow," and Chris Brody says, "You're in Denver. You could ask for more."
That'd be a good show to see.
Oh my!
Yeah, it was. It's been a great week of music, and other stuff like that. So Bradley.
So Lenny.
So, I know that you were talking about people touring and a disappointment of somebody who's not making his way.
Oh. Jeff Lynne and ELO are not coming through Denver on their summer tour.
Oh, no.
So we're,
what, they're not coming, or they haven't set the date yet?
Well, you look at their schedule and their West Coast. They hit a few in the middle, and then it's East Coast. But there's nothing in Denver. There's nothing in anywhere in the middle. You know?
Dallas?
And I looked at it, and I was like,
Phoenix?
Going, no, no, not Dallas, Phoenix, none of those. I looked at it, and I was like, going, Detroit? You're playing in Detroit, but you're not playing...
Well, is he playing Cobo? What's he playing?
In the middle. I don't know where he's playing there.
Big houses? Wall houses?
They look like big venues. I mean, he's a stadium. He's a stadium guy. I mean, the place to go see ELO would be in Wembley. You know?
Yeah, but that's with 400,000 of your closest friends.
Exactly.
No, thank you. I'm not going to go there.
You watch a few videos of him playing Wembley, and everybody is in tune with him, so...
Yeah, but that's a lot of
people. But he's a Wilbury, you know, like we
Yeah, I get it. So the other one, which I was shocked to see, you know, first of all, very happy to see that Bruce has then finally announced U.S. tour dates for 23.
$7,000 a ticket,
so
though.
That's the disappointment. So
I read, you know.
It's an interesting story how they priced it.
$7,000 is a couple of them, but it's gone down to around $4,000. So,
right.
So
the numbers were... So,
The one article I was looking at, it's like, you know, man of the working class, and then, you know, it's Ticketmaster that's doing this.
Dynamic pricing.
Well, it's like, you know, well,
$99 for some of the tickets.
Yes.
Yeah, but they're outside the stadium. It's actually access
to that's
on YouTube,
the radio.
It's on his YouTube video or something. But they're selling it like, they, you know, what would a scalper get for these? And they're just bypassing the scalper. And I was like, I'm not sure if that really makes a lot of sense, you know, no. So...
I have a lot of disdain for Ticketmaster. Sorry, mainly because of, you know, how much of that ticket price does
make it to the performer?
Make it to the performer, and if you know, if the performer says all tickets can be, you know, X. You know,
so here was my favorite counter story to this, which I read. Do you know what an Adele ticket is selling for?
$20. $25.
I don't know. $10,000.
$40,000.
I don't have that problem yet.
Would you imagine that?
First of all, I don't have the 40 grand. Second of all, I wouldn't pay it to go see Adele.
Well, you know, I'd go to see Adele. Let's be very, very clear.
I would, but not for 40 grand.
But I don't know that I'd see. I don't know that I'd go see anybody for. I mean, maybe if God was performing, maybe I'd go 40,000. Or if the Beatles were to come back, you know what I mean?
No.
No, the not. Beatles were to no. come back, and it was in a 300-person place where I wouldn't be screaming. I might go see them.
So there's your question: if money was not an object, uh-huh. and all the band members were present, and everything being equal, what would be the band?
The question was the venue also.
And the venue is of your choice. I mine would be Pink Floyd. I mean, that would be a show to go see.
I'm still performing of any era.
It could be of any era. I mean, Benny Goodman's on my list too.
Yeah. I was about to say Duke Ellington yeah. Orchestra. So
I'd like to see
Miles Davis, John Coltrane.
Frank
Quintet,
yeah,
Frank.
With
in Vegas,
with the orchestra,
Nelson Riddle with Quincy in the band.
Oh, in Vegas,
in Vegas,
that'd
yeah.
be nice.
In Vegas, where my seat,
yeah, at the Sands,
where my seat were not in the first row, but in that second tier elevated.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be good.
Sitting center section, right behind the sound, yeah. right behind the sound mixer. If I could see
Billie Holiday in a dive in, you know, Chicago or
Kansas
New York
City.
Or Kansas City, I'd do that, you know.
Dirty,
yeah.
Dirty shit on the floor.
A little smoky room.
Art Blakey. So I got a chance to see Art Blakey later in his life. But in those years in the 50s where he had the Lee Short and all those other guys, Wayne Shorter and the other, any one of those combinations where he was a band leader, but he was cooking those young musicians through it. I mean, he had some tight. So we talk about tight jazz.
Oh, James Brown.
No, well, I'm sorry. So JB, let me just say that JB's, I've had the pleasure, you know, JB. In the Apollo.
I don't want to hear the story again.
No, I'm not going to tell the story.
You
can
but see
just
it
say,
right now. It's in his mind's eye. You can see it.
JB in the Apollo, 12th row center. So you're not right close because you can't see the orchestra.
It was hot that day in New York.
it was even hotter in the Apollo.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, that would be, if you want, Malden, if you want to see a show, JB... In his 67, 68 prime, just before Say It Loud moment,
mm-hmm.
was that 64 to 67 arc where it started right at, where he got challenged by the Rolling Stones and what he did at the TAMI show, to 67, 68 where he really was king of the hill, was blocking 400 nights a year at a 390-year concert run. He'd double book a concert. He'd have a second band playing, and Rick James was being James Brown. Could you imagine how powerful and potent that guy was at that moment?
Oh, he was the godfather.
B.B. King in his prime.
I saw that.
But that's what I'm saying. B.B. King in his prime. Michael.
That was a show I never got to
Michael,
see. That would have been something.
So I saw Michael through probably three arcs of his career.
I would like to see him at the when he was first got away from the Jacksons and did the Wall. That would have been
right.
So the moment I wanted to see him.
So I saw Jackson 5 when he first, the Wall moment, and then
Thriller.
The Thriller moment.
Yeah.
And I will tell you that, and not that he wasn't great in those last two, but there was something magical.
It was still a challenge.
Of Michael.
He was not jaded. He was just dancing.
He was the machine.
Yeah.
I mean, this kid took a leap that only Michael Jordan I've seen done, where he could, literally the band could fly.
Yeah. So I think I'd like to see Parliament Funkadelic when Eddie Hazel was the guitarist. Because I've seen him, but not with Eddie Hazel. And Eddie Hazel was something to be seen.
Something to behold. Huh?
I will say that Zappa in his moment was the show.
Yeah.
That was Zappa one of those. And that was, again, 67, 68 Zappa moments were just like, what was that? And it was.
We just saw something.
And there was nothing. There was no way to describe it to anybody. It was just. It was Zappa. That's yeah. It. You had to say. You walked out. You said. I got no words.
I just saw something. Wasn't sure what it was.
But I know I liked it, and I'm going to see it again.
You know. Now, I've been lucky, and so as we all have here, to see so many bands in their prime, their pre-prime, their post-prime. The bands I most miss out are small bands that I wish I had seen.
Right.
You know, that I got an album of theirs, and like, oh.
A moment.
That, like, I wish I had seen this. This would have been really cool.
Fairport Convention.
I would have
Fairport
loved to see.
Fairport Convention. Yeah. So I got to see Fairport Convention at the Fillmore. And Fairport Convention, I remember going to that show. And you want to laugh? Who was it, the headliner of that show? Delaney and Bonnie and Friends.
Yeah. Well, I
think
can
about
that
for a second. So Fairport Convention is the headliner.
Right.
And Delaney. And so everybody just saw God of the Guitar,
right?
One of the gods of the Beatles, Leon Russell, and everybody else play, and now they're waiting.
You know, we're gonna have to have another topic of that, of what warm up band for the big. I think we've touched on a little bit, but what warm up band for a concert you've seen where the warm up band has gone on and been very successful.
Jay Giles Band,
and the main act just kind of fell away.
Jay Giles Band, number one, 100%. First of all, Jay Giles Band, when Bill Graham saw him in Boston, walked up to them after. It's a great story. And if you've never read the Bill Graham autobiography, walked up to them after he saw them in this club. He says, "I don't know what the hell you guys, you know, if you got a label, I don't know who the hell your manager is. I'm telling you right now." You are now my premier opening act for the Fillmore East and the Fillmore West. And
have a nice day.
and they went, you know, in the immortal words of Peter Wolf, I'm not, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, and I remember the first time when they walked out, Bill Graham himself did the intro. And he said, I want you to know, this is now our official house band.
So, a couple more bands I want to throw out here. Not warm up bands, because that's another topic, as you say.
But I just had to say Dingo.
But bands I would love to have seen in their prime: Mad Dogs and Englishmen.
Oh, phenomenal!
With Joe Cocker.
With Joe. Phenomenal.
That would have been
phenomenal. It was and
amazing. And then smaller band, played at Woodstock, amongst other places, but the Incredible String Band. I would have loved to see them.
Incredible concert.
In their, you know, prime.
I'm 600 years old. That's right, folks.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I still remember these bands. I still have their albums.
I think I'd like to have seen Morrison with a full concert.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I saw Morrison.
You know, before, I mean, it's the Doors, powerful music.
I saw Morrison in an opera house. And that was, you know, so I saw Morrison for those famous nights in Madison Square Garden where they had where the police had to protect him. And then 3 days later, saw him in an opera house with a full orchestra. And it was like, this is the same guy? Because he was full-on mania to the poet, Jim. And it was like, and he was calm, sitting on a stool most of the night with the orchestra.
Well, that's probably his most. That's where he belonged.
Absolutely, I agree.
And he was always uncomfortable with being a rock star, and he really just wanted to be a poet.
He wanted to be a poet. Yeah.
And to emphasize your point, having had both experiences, as incredible, as truly incredible as a rock and roll celeb star that everybody talks about, this powerful figure, the potency with the man was not there. The potency of the man was him reciting his words or telling his story and free for, you know, even before rap. I mean, Jim was doing poetry live where he'd form new poems or tell new stories.
That's a real 50s, early 60s thing. The beat, it comes right out of the beat, you know, right. Of being able to just perform words.
Allen Ginsberg.
Yeah, yeah. That's one thing that, I have to say it, Patti Smith did quite well.
Oh, gee. I wonder, Walden, how many times in this episode, you know, Walden is actually in love with Patti Smith.
Well,
continues to be in love with Patti Smith. Actually was a groupie and followed Patti Smith.
I was.
But that's a story for another day, but never actually got to consummate the deal.
But that was
a
good
reference.
I got to
meet her many times.
I didn't
but that
say,
was a good reference.
I said consummate the deal. I didn't say meet her.
So, yeah, no, and Jim Morrison was one of her idols, along with Lou Reed and you know. It's because they sort of led that sort of, you know, poet rock life that she was aiming at. So that's don't want to go there, but just wanted to mention that.
Okay, so to sort of wrap her around this.
Oh, Linda Ronstadt.
Linda Ronstadt at her real prime, everybody called, and it's just like they call Frank the voice.
Yeah, she was the voice.
She had the voice. With this, so I saw her with the Stone Ponies.
Yeah.
Or Stone Pony. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, yeah.
That was one of those.
Yeah, well, she, you know, again, if she could sing today, I'd be like, you know, all over that. And if I could see her in her prime,
you'd be all over that.
I'd over that too.
If he could be all over Patti Smith in her prime.
I saw her in her prime.
Yeah, he'd be. he wanted to be all over that.
Oh, no.
All right, wrap it up, Lenny.
Okay, so Bradley, I got a question for you.
Don't start with Once Upon a Time.
The people are wondering.
Uh-oh. Yes, the people are wondering.
You know, they're begging me, Bradley.
Are they paying you money yet? That's what we're holding out for.
They're paying me, you know, in chorus, in aggravation, in you know, you talk about these podcasts, but I don't see no podcast.
Well, this, along with all the others, will be posted soon.
I agree, and it's okay. We don't need to get on Bradley publicly.
Privately, we can get on.
So, I like this topic today. Number one, because it's relevant to a lot of different, you know, a lot of movies coming out, a lot of concerts coming out. It's really good to be at concerts again.
Summer in Colorado.
Oh, my God.
You know, 2 years of really, you know, not much, you know, and now they're back to every night.
And the wife said something the other day about, and I don't know if it's old or new, so.
She said to go take a shower?
Well, that too. But Red Rocks was voted the number one concert venue in the world.
Huh. I don't know that I'd agree with that,
you know,
but.
If they put in real chairs. It would
that would take all the fun away.
So the one, so actually,
how many times do you go to a concert at Red Rocks where you actually sit down?
So let's end this with this question.
Okay.
Of the venues that you haven't gone, where would you like to go, both now, and would you have liked to go? So what venue now? I got one. Hollywood Bowl. That is on my bucket list.
On your list?
I really don't have a lot of bucket lists, but Hollywood Bowl is one that, for some reason, I've never gotten to the Hollywood Bowl. And for some reason, I want to go to the Hollywood Bowl. I can't explain it.
But does the Hollywood Bowl want to see
you? That's probably the reason why I haven't been to the Hollywood Bowl.
There's a sign out front, you know.
It says Lenny not allowed. But my daughter's been there, but I haven't been there. Walden, one venue that you like to be, or you haven't been, or you wish you would have been
I
to.
I wish I had gone to CBGB's.
Oh, my God. But, so good.
So I went to the Rat, but never got to CBGB's. You know, it was not the same. Like, you know. Not no, the they're same. Different, but they're not similar.
The one of these things are not like the other.
I don't know.
All right.
The Rat Bradley?
Lenny, take us home.
Bradley, one location for you. Don't tell me Cobo Hall.
No, I've been to Cobo Hall.
I know. Hey, Hobo Hall, don't tell me that.
I don't really know. I honestly don't know. I haven't seen that many.
So your homework assignment, Bradley, you got to think about a place.
I like small clubs.
Right, all right.
So there's thousands of small clubs I have not been to that would be good to see shows in.
So I'm going to leave the audience with this. Go out, if you haven't yet, go back to seeing live music. Support the folks who are out there doing it again. It is amazing to be able to do it again. Obviously, you heard us say that how many we've just recently seen. We strongly urge you, support your local musicians, support your national musicians, support local music. I don't care if it's jazz, rock, bluegrass, country even, you know, whatever
even?
It is.
Oh, my goodness.
No matter what it
I'd
is
like
that
see some
you
good
love,
country shows.
Whatever, no matter what it is that you love, go out and go see a live concert sometime in the next month.
Yep.
Have a great night.
Good night.